like people just send me like I mean I'll get like the blurriest, most horrifying photos.
Welcome to the Exploring Washington State podcast. Here's your host, Scott Cowan.
This episode is sponsored by Thing. The Seattle Theater Group and Sasquatch Festival founder Adam Zaks present Thing. From August 26th through the 28th at historic Fort Warden in Port Townsend, you can enjoy a vast musical lineup, including Jungle, Modest Mouse, Father John Misty, and many more. The Thing Festival features two primary stages overlooking the Puget Sound, not to mention a variety of camping and parking accommodations. You can either book a one-day or three-day pass, and kids 12 and under are free, making this an event for the whole family. Come enjoy live music, art, and beautiful Fort Warden with us. To find out all the details, visit thingnw.org. Welcome back to this episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast. I'm with Jen Borst-Dagdagnan. We're just going to leave it like that, Jen. You're going to correct me in a minute.
But yeah, you're fine. Jen
is an artist in the Yakima area, and we found Jen through her Mountain Jen Instagram profile, where we saw some of your art, and we started looking at it and went down the rabbit hole that way. You and I have talked a little bit before. So, Jen, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your backstory?
Well, my backstory in the kind of painting art world is I got a graphic design degree from Perry Tech back in like 2000. And back then we still did a bunch of all hand done airbrush and things, and weren't really, computers came in the second half of my schooling. So I kind of kept going with my like by hand stuff, like just for fun. And I worked as a graphic designer for a little bit once I finally learned how to do it on a computer. And then I quit doing that because I had a couple kids. And a couple years into that, I was just like feeling a desperate need to do art. And so I just started to paint just abstract stuff, like on just for myself, just to practice and just for fun, and ended up having a friend stop by for something else. And I had a bunch of stuff stacked up, and she ran like the Humane Society auctions and all the like little events. And she's like, you have to show your stuff. And so I did. And I kind of then got offered a show at Gilbert Sellers and Oak Hollow very soon after that. And it kind of just took on a life that I wasn't anticipating, because I was totally thinking that I was going in the photography and graphic design area. And since then, I've done painting shows like every 2 years. But it was like about once a year prior to that, like prior to the last couple of years. And I stumbled upon mountains. A friend of mine just asked me to paint one, because she was kind of she was decorating like her house and mountain stuff. And I was like, I don't paint things. I just do abstract stuff. Like, and she was like, well, just try. So I made her this tiny little painting of a mountain, and it like went really fast, and it looked good. I thought it was way messier than what they look like now, but I was like, oh, that was fun. And I was in the middle of working on a show at that point, a big abstract show. And then I had like 6 pieces done, and they had been incredibly frustrating. And I had like really wanted to throw a bunch of them in the garbage can. And I cried over that show. And then all of a sudden I was like, well, maybe I should just keep going with these mountains. And I painted like 30 little mountains and, take them to the show. It was a very, very contrasting show, because like it didn't look like the same artist was doing it. And I mean, maybe a little bit, but I sold every single one of those mountains that I did, and but they were just teeny tiny at the time because I was just like nervous to go bigger. And then I got a call from another lady. She was like, "Oh, I saw your things. I want a bigger one." And I painted a bigger one. And then one of the restaurants in town called soon after that, and they wanted a 16-foot by 2.5-foot mountain. And I was like, "Oh, I don't know about that." And they were like, "Just come do it. Come try." And so I painted that in the upstairs of Crafted here in Yakima. Mm-hmm. We had to build the canvas on site, and then like to get it down into the restaurant, we had to go out into the middle of First Street with it. And then it was quite an undertaking. And then pretty much from that, I have been doing almost nothing but straight commissions one after the next. I'm like 7 deep right now. And I did a show this last January or February, and that, mm-hmm. So I take a little break and do a show, and sold everything except for one out of that one. And that's just what I've been doing. It's like, wow. Kind of been a weird like domino effect or reverse, okay. Domino. I don't know. But well, yeah, that's a rough overview.
That's the backstory. So
yeah.
Did you grow up in Yakima, or did you move, yes. to Yakima?
I was born in Sunnyside, and I lived there till I was 5, and then we moved here at, mm-hmm. that point.
And where is Perry Tech located at?
That's in Yakima.
In Yakima.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 16-foot canvas. Where does one even buy canvas?
Well, luckily the owner of Crafted, he is also a furniture builder. Like, I guess that was his like original trade.
Okay.
And so he knows, and I guess he's like done art before, like, which I didn't know. I don't know if many people knew that. And he knows how to stretch canvases. So he built it, ordered the canvas. I can't even imagine what that cost to get that much canvas. But he just had it ready for me, and it was like, "Come in and do this." And so, wow. Okay. Yeah, it took me about a month. So yeah, it was really fun actually doing that one.
So when you transitioned away from abstracts into more mountain stuff, you said you did a bunch of small paintings.
Yeah.
How big, or what do you mean by small paintings?
5 inch by 5 inch. Okay, or so like
really, yeah, small.
Really, okay. Small. Like, I think the biggest one was like maybe like 10 inch by 10 inch.
Okay. And so now your typical mountain art, what size canvases are you working with?
It's like it averages about 6 foot by 4 foot.
Oh, wow, okay. So you've really...
And I've done a 7.5 by 10 feet, I believe. That was maybe my biggest one.
Okay.
So like we likes, I guess, square footage wise, but, okay. Yeah. So as long as I can make the like panels at Lowe's fit, like wherever, or like if I can cut them to the right size, then I can do whatever that size is. So,
okay.
Yeah.
What do you use for references? I mean, are you trying to replicate the mountain exactly? Are you, you know, what are you using? Are these inspired by certain mountains? Or are you just making this up as you go?
Oh,
how's that?
Most clients that approach me, they have an idea of a place, or mm-hmm. they want me to paint like their, you know, where they went on their honeymoon, or like a place that, or sometimes it's even their own view out of their, you know, out of their living room.
Okay.
Whatever view, like people just send me like, I mean, I'll get like the blurriest, most horrifying photos, but all I need is basic shapes. And then I sort of just mix it and mix colors until they feel right to me. And it's nothing like a like picture of it. Like it's more, mm-hmm. it more just captures like the colors and movement. So it's still in the abstract vein, mm-hmm. but just not exact. Like it's not a you know, a Thomas Kinkade or anything. Like,
right. You're not trying to be photorealistic. Yeah,
they're
or something.
Still very graphic. And I even had a lady wanted me to come in and maybe put my stuff in at the college she worked at. And she talked to her professors about it. And they were like, this is not fine art. This is graphic design. And okay. I was like, oh, okay. Well, no computers were used in, but yeah, so it's an interesting way to do it. But I mean, aside from that kind of weirdly negative comment, like most people are totally fine with it.
Right.
So.
Are you painting with acrylic or with oil or what medium are you working in?
It's chalk paint.
Chalk paint?
Yeah. And so, they have a lot of different colors.
Help me out here.
Yeah.
What the heck is chalk paint?
It's like a paint that has, I think it's like, it's whatever chalk is made out of, which is like some sort of bicarbonate of some.
Chalk.
Some
it's made out of chalk.
Made out of chalk. Yeah. And it's mixed with like an acrylic base, but it just gives it this really like flat, matte sort of creamy look to it.
Okay.
And so there's no gloss or anything, and no absolutely zero texture. So
how'd you end up with chalk paint? Did you start with chalk paint or
I no? did not. I okay. stumbled upon it. I was looking at the paint section of the store and I needed just like a big tub of white paint and they were mm-hmm. out. And then right over here was these big tubs of white chalk paint. And it was said it was acrylic. And I was like, oh, this will be fine. This is good. I can just mix everything in that. And then I started mixing my colors into the chalk paint, like just regular acrylics. And I really, really liked the finish of it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it's like, it kind of feels to me like the difference between a glossy photograph and a matte photograph on like fine art paper. Like it just felt more like richer.
Okay.
And the colors are just, they're not as like really vibrant, but they're just a more natural, it gives it like a clay like finish that I really like, if okay. that makes sense, like a rough clay.
So as I hold up my hands, you see that these are all thumbs, right? I have no artistic ability.
Right.
I've got zero. So, you know, it sounds perfectly plausible to me. I'm just not the right person to say.
Yeah.
Is this an easy medium to work with? I mean, I was talking to an artist a couple of weeks ago and we were talking about oil and how it takes so long to dry mm-hmm. versus acrylics, which can dry quite quickly. Where is this in, you know, is this easy to work with? Is it challenging?
It's extremely easy to work with. And it works for me because I do all of my paintings in my dining room, which is like mostly covered in paint, but the good thing about it is that it does come off. Like I can't get it off. And so like, I just, you know, I have like once a month, I have a little scrub down day and it comes off. I mean, I'm going to have to repaint the walls, but that's okay. But the floor, it comes right off the floor. So it's a finish. Yeah. So I try not to get too much on there, but inevitably there's, even if I put drop cloth down, it gets somewhere. So it's been great, and it's no fumes since it's in my house, and all that. I don't have to use solvents, or it's just water and chalk paint. So
water and chalk paint.
Yep, and then I finish it with a wax coating.
A wax coating to kind of seal it all in then.
Yep, because it keeps the, it doesn't put any shine, or there's no like, I tried finishing one with a like clear spray, and it was horrifying. It made streaks everywhere and I had to repaint the entire painting, and I was devastated because it was like a 6-foot by 5-foot painting. So yeah, but I did it. It was fun.
Brushes, rollers, foam, cotton all balls, brush.
All brush? Brushes. Yep.
Okay.
Cheap. They're usually destroyed. And, once I literally see hairs falling out of them, then I go get more brushes, but But I'm not a fancy artist. Like I just do it until it looks right. Like I didn't go to like formal art school. I mean, I guess graphic school is sort of that, but I didn't go to like how to mix things or how to, I've just been sort of like trial and erroring it this entire time. And so, yeah, figured it out.
And so you mentioned a little earlier that you're currently, at the time we're recording this, seven deep in commissions.
Yep.
That sounds like a really terrible problem to have.
It's not. It really isn't. I just feel like I can't paint fast enough. But I'm working on that problem currently, and I actually have a friend who's an artist who's incredibly, incredibly good at lines, and she does beautiful work. She's sort of she told me she was in sort of a rut. And she was like, can I just come help you? Like, you can tell, like, write down the colors and tell me what to do, and I'll just paint. And I'm like, maybe so. I think Chihuly did that. Like, he had, like, guys doing his pieces.
Chihuly, so I'm like, to my understanding, Chihuly, I don't want to say never, but it would be exceedingly rare that Chihuly actually executed his own vision on any of the projects.
Right. And so I was like, well, if he can do it, but I mean, this is just, I just feel bad, like people waiting so long because I have so much going on. I'm a single mom of three kids and I like am running them everywhere. So I'm interrupted a lot and it's hard to stay focused. So I really have to just pick and choose like certain days that I'm focusing on it and getting big chunks done, but they're just not as many as I would like. So yeah.
If you don't mind, we're not going to disclose who any of the paintings are for. That's not what I'm asking. But can we just take one painting and talk about it specifically? So one of these seven projects you're working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? How big is it?
Well, the one I'm currently in the middle of is actually a small one. I'm kind of sticking it in the mix, because it's only going to take me a couple days, but it's a kind of an interesting piece there.
Well, first off, before I let you go on, when you say it's kind of small, let's be specific here. It's not 5x5.
It's 6 inches by 23 inches. So it's a very long rectangle. Yeah.
Okay. 6x23. Got it.
Yeah. And the idea, this is just the first in hope. She wants to do like the side of her porch, I believe. And it's like, basically we're covering the trim of her house in all of their favorite hiking spots, like different. Yeah. So it's going to be basically, I'm going to steal it for outdoor and, like slowly over the next like year, I'm going to do like she wants seven of them, like kind of lined up like tiles along one side of like kind of by their patio, I guess. And it's like, it's kind of a, like an interesting little concept. And so this is the first of that, and it's Mount Hood. And it's a little break. I've been doing a lot of Yakima Hills paintings. And so I kind of go back and forth between Mount Hood and Yakima Hills, just being from this area, and a lot of Mount Adams too. But yeah, so it's a little break from that. And then I'm getting ready to start one for a friend in Seattle who gave me free rein to do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking I'm going to go really kind of different, like maybe do the mountains in like hot pink. And he's like incredibly artistic and, like open-minded. So I think he'd be a safe one for me to actually really experiment with. So it'll be different. It won't be quite so like, I guess like living roomy. It'll be maybe, it'll feel more, a little more free and, artsy. And so I'm kind of excited for that one.
So this one that's 6 inches by 23, you said a couple of days worth of work.
I probably have a couple more hours right now. I started it yesterday. Okay. But yeah.
Okay. So
just a little bit in there.
A little bit. But like a bigger, of these seven, let's just stay with the seven. Mm-hmm. Are these 2 to 4 days a piece? Are these a week long?
That's a really good question, because I usually have to spread it out. So I guess if I was going to estimate, like the one I just delivered yesterday was 4 foot by 3 foot, I believe.
Okay.
And that one, I bet it took me maybe 25 hours.
Okay.
Like, so they're definitely, I don't calculate them very well, but I mean, I had a good, like, you know, like 2 months of working, like a couple, you know, 3 hour chunks. It's just, it's so hard to say. It's just, they kind of take until they're done. Like, and
well,
I've had small ones take me just as long as a big one. It just kind of depends on where I'm at in my head and where my concentration is. And if I have, you know, if I absolutely had to, I could probably get that size one done in a week. If I did it like three, four hours a day straight. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But unfortunately, I just don't have that luxury.
Single mom with three kids.
It's a little, and I have a bunch of other side jobs. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So you started out, you know, you're doing this art for your own creative gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Friend says, hey, you need to show this. You start showing it. People start responding to it, buying it, asking for more.
Yeah.
And you've been shown in other places. And you mentioned Crafted, which I think we'll go down that rabbit hole a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But today, how are people finding out about you? What is working for you? Is it just word of mouth now?
It's Instagram, I believe, and word of mouth. I've had people I don't even know, like across the country. I've done pieces for them as long as I can get them. I've had to have a friend drive one down to San Francisco with him. It's like whoever contacts me, and if they have the means to have me do it and ship, then we do it. And I've got them in Europe. And like people, they're finding me. Yeah. Like, and a lot of it is word of mouth, like the local stuff, but, I've also had really good success with Instagram. So, and that's pretty much
why do you think Instagram's been a success?
I think it's honestly like, it's just been an easy way for people to share. And like, if people buy a piece and they're like, someone sees it, and then usually they'll contact like, I saw it in my friend's house and like found you on Instagram. And like, then we can actually talk and discuss. Cause a lot of people, you know, I honestly think most of my business transactions go through there. Like even even like the Venmo, like money side of it, like it's all discussed through Instagram just because it's such a like widely used platform and it's so visual. And, I'm not sure why it's working so well, but it seems like it's just like a very easy, and everyone's on it, and everyone just knows how it functions, and they know they can get a hold of me. So it's easy to share and stuff. So,
all right.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. It's always interesting talking to people like what platform works for them versus what doesn't work for them. You know,
right.
some people absolutely love TikTok, and I just personally, meh.
I've just never been on it.
Yeah.
It's
not my thing anyway, but some people absolutely have these massive audiences on TikTok. They have, they have really engaged audiences on Twitter or on Facebook or, you know, whatever. And so it's always just interesting. I love to ask people like what's working for you, because there's always nuggets of information that, you know, and like you said, people, it's a visual platform. It's familiar. You know, there's a degree of comfort baked in
because
everyone's comfortable, comfortable with it. So you mentioned side jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talked on the phone before, I don't remember how it exactly came up. I think you must have brought it up. But you know Paul McKee.
Yeah.
And so, once again, all roads lead to Tieton.
Yep.
It's just so weird.
It's just true.
So Paul was a guest on a previous episode, which I'll link to in the show notes if people want to hear my conversation with Paul. Paul's an artist. He runs a nonprofit gallery in Seattle. You guys connected over a chandelier installation. Is that, yes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we've talked about art. We've talked about painting, right? Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden we're shifting over here to this chandelier thing.
Right.
Walk me through, what was your chandelier like, and what was this, why were you hanging it? What was going on?
Well, they had a competition and I was like, that is so cool. Like, what a cool idea. Like, you could just make a chandelier out of anything. And I feel like I was in this, like, part of, it was before I started really doing a ton of shows, and my paintings were, I just had this idea. And I was like, I wonder if I could make that happen. And it was like made out of, I wanted to do one of like the clear squirt guns, like the little, I wanted the squirt guns to be lit up. And
okay.
So I sat and thought about it, and I was like, it dawned on me what I needed to do. And so I spent like, 2 months every night for like hours. I zip tied and drilled through squirt guns, and then I found a big ferret ball. It was called a ferret fun ball. And,
okay.
Like you'd put your ferret in and it could run around the house.
Yep.
So it's just like this idea dawned. I don't even know how it like came to me in a dream or something. I don't remember. And then I was like, I must have seen this before. So I like even Googled it, and I'm like, am I just, and then nope, there's nothing. No squirt gun chandeliers, no fun ball chandeliers. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll do this. So I sat there painstakingly zip tying these squirt guns to the ferret fun ball, which I also had to drill through, and it took so long. This was in like November, I believe, or October and November, and it's really hard to get squirt guns in those months of the year.
I don't know why.
And so I bought as many as I could find, and then like I ordered some, and I thought, how many squirt guns could it possibly take to go around this ball? And I ended up having to make an order of like 250 squirt guns. And it's just like, it was unbelievable because they're kind of small. And then like, so it's filling up the hole. And I wanted it like a sun, like a, it was like a wild animal that started. It was, and then once I got started, I had to finish it. And so I was just working day and night on this thing. And then my ex-husband helped me wire in like a light, like there's a hole that you put the ferret in, and we like figured out how to make it hang and like have a light bulb in there. And lo and behold, I had a squirt gun chandelier. So.
Okay. So first off, I could make all sorts of partially inappropriate commentary, but inspiration comes in many different ways. Let's just put it that
way.
So you created a ferret fun ball squirt gun chandelier.
Yes.
I'm just going to pause and repeat that. A ferret fun ball squirt gun chandelier. Mm-hmm. Okay. The listeners are tracking now.
Yeah.
And you did this because of the competition up in Tieton.
Yep.
So you've created, do you still have the chandelier? What happened to the chandelier?
Sadly, first off, when they were taking it off the ceiling, they dropped it and it shattered into a billion pieces.
Okay. So do you have photographs of
this? I have one photo of it.
One photo.
Yeah.
Because without photos, it's not real. I mean, that's just the other thing. You know, it's like, okay.
No, I'm trying to look. Oh, I have it right here.
Okay.
It's right here. Yeah.
But so this isn't just an audio medium, but I will get to see it, folks.
You'll get to see it, yes. Do you want to see it right now?
Yes. Let's before we go on.
So you believe me.
It's not that I don't believe you. That's not where I'm going with this.
Oh, yeah.
I am trying to wrap my non-artistic brain around a ferret fun ball squirt gun chandelier.
It looked like that. And then that was it close up.
That's crazy.
That's it close up. Yeah.
Okay.
It's
that's
cute,
okay,
right?
No, it's very cool. It is. It's genuinely very cool. All right. So you took this chandelier to Tiatin. Mm-hmm. And let's reference Paul on this one. Paul, you met Paul there. Yep. Right? That's like, what was Paul's reaction to this chandelier?
I think that's why, I mean, he liked it a lot. Like, I think that's why we're friends. Because I think he's got a really unconventional way of seeing art. And, like, he's just brilliant. And I think, like, I was so flattered that, because I loved his, because he does these, like, deer head castings and, like, all the antlers. And mm-hmm. I was drawn to his work. And then, like, we ended up, you know, I can't remember how it went, but I think one of us was like, oh, this is awesome, right? And I was like, yeah, this is mine. Or it was vice versa. And then we just got to talking. And, like, we've had definite, like, breaks in communication, but we've always met up or like tried to hang out. He's come to a couple of my shows in Seattle. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, he's like the coolest. And then I just found out that he and his partner bought a home out here in Tiatin. So now mm-hmm. he's occasionally close by. So
right.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Like I said, all roads lead to Tiatin.
All
roads lead to Tiatin. So that's actually a very cool, art piece. That's very cool. And I'm glad you were able to have a photograph of it because
my brain wasn't good.
Yeah. Yes. I was struggling with that. I really
well, I
was.
Think I think I thought of it because I was trying to think of things that light would pass through,
mm-hmm.
you know, that.
Right.
Yeah. So that. And that was cool. One of the things that came up. So I was like, I could do that. Of course. Duh.
Of course. Okay. Yeah. Hello. All right. So I'd like to circle back to this place in Yakima that I've never been to, but multiple people have told me is a really cool space. You have mentioned that as well, and you have a painting there. So mm-hmm. what, and this is not about you. So, I mean, it is about you, but it's not about you, but Crafted, what's going on there? What do our listeners need to know about Crafted in Yakima?
Crafted is very unique for Yakima. I mean, it is, I look at it as like partially just basically like an art show. Like Dan Kumu is the chef there, and he is an incredible artist as well as chef. And like every single, it's the type of food with it like, it's presented so beautifully and so it's so artistic and unlike anything else in Yakima. It's just like, you know, we've got a lot of, you know, like teriyaki joints and burger joints. And so this is like a very, it's kind of just like a special, like it's, I feel like he's just an artist at work and he just mm-hmm. happens to use food as his medium. And it really works. And it's kind of the place where you go like for your birthday or like very special occasion or to impress people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a lovely spot and like just really well done. Everything about it is really artistic and well done. So it was a huge honor to be able to, that they even asked me because, you know, I had a ton of respect for them before that. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Well, you mentioned food, and at the time we're recording this, it's before lunchtime, and
mm-hmm.
I might be getting a little hungry. When we talked before, somehow, well, I always talk about two things, and food being one of them. And somehow I was mentioning, and I mentioned in passing, that whenever I drive through Yakima, one of my favorite places to go for a inexpensive meal. I don't want to say cheap because that sounds derogatory, but inexpensive. At the time, they just raised the prices a while ago. So now it's $6. And it's like, I just can't believe they charge $6 for five tacos and a soda, is Fiesta Foods.
Oh, yeah.
But they're really tasty tacos.
Yeah.
And for $6, you can't go to McDonald's for $6.
Oh no.
But you mentioned another place that has kind of this, to me, funky location and all of that. So go ahead and share with us your taco recommendation for Yakima.
I will. It is Los Primos taco truck. It's just called okay. Primos. And it is right
so out. So it's a taco truck. First off, it's a taco truck. Okay.
It's a truck.
Okay.
And it has been our favorite for like years now. And it's right outside of a laundromat on First Street, which First Street is not the most, the most inviting part of town, I should say, but they are absolutely incredible. And just super fast. And my favorite is that they have the, I'm not going to think of the name, Al Pastor.
Okay.
And not many places have really amazing al pastor, which is pork and like seasoned pork with like little pineapple chunks, if for who doesn't know that. And a lot of them just don't have it, and they do. And so I just started going there, and that's where, and I've got a bunch of, you know, musician friends that come through town and stuff, and they now it's like must stop. Like the minute they get to town, they're at Los Primos, and there's no question about there's not even any other truck that we go to. Like, it's just, it's delicious and always perfect. So
I have this apprehension about going to food trucks.
Oh yeah.
Especially when they're located in like in front of like, say, a laundromat.
Right.
That seems like my brain just, I would just talk myself out of that and go, you know, to fast food through a window type thing, because it's known quantity. You said this has been your favorite for years. So I'm going to ask you to go back to, how did you find them? What was the, are you one of those adventuresome eaters that you'll just try whatever, or did somebody point this out to you?
I'm trying to remember. My ex-partner lived in an apartment on First Street for a long time. And so he was like very familiar with all the taco joints up in the street. And that we sort of like, we would work our way through them because it's such untapped gold mines.
Right.
Like there's just absolute gems. And I think the big, like the vast majority of the population would avoid that area, but there's so many like amazing little hole in the wall spots. And I believe that we just like kind of stumbled upon that spot, and it just became like a no brainer, like to the point where like I was shooting an event where there was a New York food critic. And Crafted wasn't open, and we wanted to get her food from Crafted, obviously, because it's like beautiful, like the food you'd want to give to a New York Times. And then they closed, and I said to the event planner, I was like, what about Los Primos? And she's like, yes, 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 yes. And I think they ended up getting her food from there, and she was absolutely enchanted. So
okay,
there you go. Like,
all right.
And that's kind of what they're looking for. Like taco trucks are kind of like a little delicacy. And there's good ones, and I'm sure there's bad ones, but luckily, like I just know of a good one, and that's the one I go to.
Right.
So,
well, and see, for me, getting to talk to people every episode, I'm always learning something about, you know, in this case, Yakima, right?
Yeah.
So now I've got this Los Primos Taco Truck to go check out next time I'm there. Yep. Nothing against Fiesta Foods, because I know exactly, it's right off the highway for me. You know, it really works into my drive routine. Mm-hmm. So this one, I'm going to have to go find it. It's not going to be that far. I mean,
it's just right off the freeway.
But I wouldn't have, I know me, and I wouldn't, it'd be very unlikely without a local's endorsement that I would stop at a taco truck in any town without somebody saying, go check this out. And you're right. They are. There's some amazing food at food trucks, and there's just amazing food at food trucks.
Right.
Now, the other important thing that maybe actually it's more important than tacos, if you can believe that, for me is coffee.
Okay. Gotcha.
I can drink coffee from the morning, the moment I get up in the morning until right before I go to bed at night. I'll just drink coffee because I enjoy it.
Right.
Are you a coffee fan?
Yes, I am. I mean, I drink. Okay. I also drink it every morning. Like, no,
I mean, most of us.
Like, okay, used to be more of like a connoisseur of it, but now I just it's just like a utilitarian beverage for me. Right. But
and that's still completely fine.
Coffee. Yes, I would be able to.
I mean, I will drink. I will drink gas station coffee. I don't seek it out per se.
Right.
But I will drink. I will go into a convenience store and get a cup of coffee before I buy a soda, probably.
Right.
So that being said, what do you recommend for coffee in Yakima?
Well, my number one favorite coffee spot is Collab Coffee. My friend Maddie Hicks runs it with her partner Buck. And it is a very like inclusive place. Like they have all kinds of events for the Hispanic and Native community and the LGBTQ community. I've been so impressed with them because they have like hosted artists from those communities and really embraced music. And I've been helping her put together like a bunch of like songwriter type shows, and we're trying to, you know, get as much diversity in that as possible. And they have amazing coffee. She used to, I think she still roasts the beans herself, and so which is makes it kind of special. And either that or her business partner may do that. So I'm not sure.
And where is Collab at?
It is also on First Street, but down a little further, like more in the like, oh gosh, it's right there, kind of. It's First Street, but like on very close to like south. It's on the south side. So it's not North First Street where like it's a little not so much in the questionable area, but it's down like more close to like the First and Yakima. So right off of First and Yakima.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that, you know, an inclusive space, but they do music. Mm-hmm. So another easy question for me is, because I enjoy music as well, in your opinion, where's a good place to see live music performed in Yakima?
Well, there are a few spots. We do a couple shows a month, usually at Collab, and working up that little following, and it's sort of like they feel kind of like house shows a little bit, but like just the format, like it's basically just like come pay at the door. And you know, we do as much advertising as we possibly can, and we've been getting a really pretty packed houses the last few shows. And then I would say obviously the Seasons Performance Hall is a lot bigger. It's like a 500 seat. Yeah. But they also have a bistro gallery in the back, and where they serve food and stuff they usually do like a couple live, like more like local artists. Maybe I think about once or twice a week. And then, there's an open mic there. So, they're, you know, trying to like involve more people that are maybe a little bit shy to do like shows, but like, it's like a lot of like younger kids are starting to go. And, then I haven't been to this space, but people say really good things about it. It's Bearded Monkey. They do like more like rock shows, like rock and roll. And then I'm sure I'm forgetting a few, like, other, like, I'm just trying to think of like a constant place.
Well, and that's challenging. I mean,
yeah. And there's a lot of people that have like cover bands at bars, but which isn't really in that, like, that's not, but for like listening, like actual songwriter, like going in and having an experience, I would definitely put the Seasons and Collab Coffee right at the top. Okay. Cause like it's a very active effort to do those types of shows there. So yeah, that's, I would definitely look up both of those for music here.
Good. So we're going to transition back to you and your art. See how the segments, see how it just doesn't flow at all.
You're so good
at it. Just doesn't. You know, it doesn't flow. I mean, we just acknowledge it doesn't flow and then we go right back to it. What do you think the future is going to look like for you? What do you want to do artistically moving forward?
Well,
I mean, look, we've talked about mountains. We've talked about little 5x5s. We talked about 16-foot long things. We talked about guns in ferret balls.
Yeah.
You know, what else are you going to do?
I honestly, if I ever get through these commissions, which I probably won't, that's going to be like a part of my life for a long time. But I would like to start maybe focusing in more on, because I'm also a photographer and I've had a photography business for 20 years. And I have been really focused on like family portraits and stuff. But my goal lately is I really would like to do like more fine art type photographs and maybe like focus on documenting musicians. And like I've done a few like just basically been a fly on the wall at some recording sessions. And like kind of the documentary photography thing is like really fulfilling for me. Like I really love watching people just in their own environment and especially artists and documenting that. And figuring out a way, you know, to incorporate that into like some art pieces or something. So that's kind of where my mind has been going. Like things that I really feel like I haven't had time to do, but I would love to be doing. And so a little bit of that, and just if I was, and I would like to get back to doing some like more like sculptural assemblage type things, which is where I was in the middle of dabbling during the squirt gun phase. but I've been thinking a lot about like that type of thing, like kind of like junk sculpture type thing. You know, not actual junk, but like, you know, like objects
found objects. Okay,
like that's always really appealed to me. And I just I've sort of gotten away from it because I but I'm, you know, it's like it's hard. It's like I need to have time to do this stuff creatively, but then I also have to pay bills. And so it's like very hard to like find all the time to do all the things. So, but yeah, I would say if one thing I would like to do the photos and like more sculptures type things. Okay. So, yeah.
So this will probably be one of the last questions I have. This is a very specific question. Mm-hmm. Could you ever imagine your art on a beer can?
Oh my goodness. I can imagine. Strangely enough, I can.
Really?
Yeah. Cause there is that. Very, very smart. Yes. Tricky.
How did that come about? And first off, before you tell that, tell us the brewery and all of that and what is in the can, because your art is on the can.
Yes. So, it came about, I believe it was my second mountain show, when I cut the abstract out and went to Straight Mountains. One of the owners of Varietal Brewing in Sunnyside, which is where I was born. So it was all kind of cool collaboration with that whole concept. And they, he came in and I think he bought, I don't know, like not like maybe like either like 7 or 8, maybe 9 pieces out of that show because they were just finishing up building that brewery and they needed artwork. And so it was pretty incredible. And he basically just bought it out, like bought the last remaining things. And it's like stuff's been hanging down there. And they contacted me, I think it was summer of, we'd been talking the spring of 2020 about doing a project. And then I think I painted it in the middle of 2020. And it was sort of in this, like, in this zone of like, are we going to, I think they were wondering if they were even going to stay open. So I had painted it. They paid for the painting and I didn't hear anything for, I don't know, maybe like 8 months or something. And I kind of, mm-hmm. I kind of forgot about it actually. And then woke up one morning and I had a bunch of messages. Like they had released a can, it was called Open Country. And it was, I did the design based on the Sunnyside Hills, which are very okay. similar to Yakima Hills. But yeah, we did, like, it was a bright sun, like very like vivid, like yellow, green, blue. So they sent that to a designer and he like configured it for the beer can. And it's like it's a lager, I believe. I don't think it's an IPA, but it's really good. And I normally don't like lagers, but yeah, they put that, like, it's very refreshing. And so everyone seems to like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So
you're how was that? Don't take this the wrong way. I'm teasing you, but now your art is disposable because they were going to recycle the can. So,
I know. Yeah. So sad.
But that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool though.
Yeah.
And so a local brewery.
Yeah.
Local artist teaming up. Putting yep. art on cans, making it approachable and accessible to the masses.
Yes. And they've been
that's kind of cool.
various local artists. And they've been just so, I mean, even like, I think when even they were questioning if they were going to keep afloat, they were still supporting local artists. So like,
that's cool.
An amazing company. So that's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So here's my last question mm-hmm. for you. What didn't I ask you that I should have asked you?
I don't know. I guess we didn't really touch on music, but I mean, that's a whole nother podcast probably.
Okay. All right.
But yeah,
I'll take you up on that.
Yeah. I've just been a harmony singer and I've used to tour all over the country and that kind of thing. And it's been, yeah. So that's just part of my like wide range of things. But
well, so okay, so you've given me another question. This is to me an interesting question that I should ask people more often. But you're born in Sunnyside, you live in Yakima, mm-hmm. but you just said you've toured around and you've seen the states. Why Yakima? Well, why haven't you left? Not that you should leave, I don't mean like that, but why, what keeps you drawn to the Yakima and the Yakima Valley?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'd say the biggest reason is I share custody with three kids here of three kids here in town.
Right.
And, I own a home here. So I think eventually I would like to, you know, try out living somewhere else. And,
where, let me put you on the spot.
Hmm.
As of recording, as yeah. of this date in 2022, where would you go?
If I could, I would probably like, maybe, I mean, if I could afford it, I would love to live in San Francisco in the Bay Area. Okay. Or either that, my other very, very favorite place I've ever visited was Charlottesville, North Carolina. So,
okay.
Yeah. Very, very different, but those are the two that stuck out. Or just like somewhere that's by water, like maybe
okay.
like Astoria, like Oregon coast type situation. But I don't know. Okay. I haven't narrowed it down. Like I'm kind of open to a lot of things. So
All right. I guess I do have one more last question. This is, yeah. So this is a question that you have to answer either in the affirmative or in the negative.
Okay.
Okay. Is Yakima the Palm Springs of Washington?
I think it's pretty close. I think it's kind of close. And I kind of figured out over the years thinking about it, we have a lot. I've always wondered, like, why did they call it that? We have a ton of sun, for starters. It's like 300 days of sun. And our summers are super hot. It's just nothing like what people would think the West Side is. And then we also have a lot of mid-century modern homes here. Like, there's whole neighborhoods and some, like, I kind of wonder if it's not a little bit of that, too. So we have some, like, really beautiful, amazing mid-century style houses. And from that era, which is basically all there is in Palm Springs. So I've always wondered about that. I think it's as close as you could get with having like harsh winters. Like, it's a silly thing, but I always wondered if that might be it.
No, I don't think it's a silly thing at all. I think it's actually a really insightful answer. I was trying to be funny because I find that sign to be just like laughable, and right. I always have.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that you drew in the similarities in mid-century architecture is worthy of, that's a serious response to a silly question. And I applaud you for that.
Well, thank you. I had thought about it because I love mid-century, and I've read books on it. It's kind of like, if I'm going to look at a magazine, it's going to be of that kind of thing. And I started like, I'm like, there's some amazing, like there's entire neighborhood between 40th and like maybe even like 40th Avenue and 66th Avenue. It's like all built in that era. And it reminds me of Palm Springs. And I could be completely wrong, but that's what I think.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Well, that was a very insightful answer.
Well,
so, Jen, thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk with me today. I had a nice time chatting with you. It was a lot of fun. And I appreciate the recommendations. You know, truthfully, I probably appreciate the taco recommendations more than the coffee recommendations this time.
Gotta go.
Although, yeah, I think I do, and I'll have to report back on that. So, but thank you. I'm glad you were here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Join us next time for another episode of the Exploring Washington State Podcast.